Pop Talk and Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.
Ah, thank you, thank you, thank you, honey. I feel better about myself when I hear a woman say my name like that. And if you're single like I am, I recommend you get a woman to record herself saying your name, because when I'm down and when I'm blue, she is always there. Anyway, this is William Clear. This is Pop Talk and Aliens, and it is a podcast. But today, no Pop Talk. All aliens. You and me on a trip to Area 51. I have been looking forward to this podcast for a while because I am enamored with Area 51. I am fascinated by it. Anything that comes out about it, whether it be a TV show or a special or a shitty book, I am there. I will eat it up. Love that place. So I'm going to tell you everything I know about it. And when we're done, we'll see what you think. See what conclusions you come to. So let's not waste any more time. Let's get right. Well, let's waste just a little more time. Fine. Area 51 is probably the government's worst kept secret in history. It's been around since the 50s, but it wasn't actually acknowledged by the CIA until 2013. Even though the public has known about it for years. So what do they do there, and why so goddamn long to acknowledge it? Who do they think they were fooling? But most importantly, what is there? What is that Area 51? I will take you through the whole fucking thing. And like my Roswell podcast episode, I'll let you make up your own mind. I have no agenda. But as with Roswell, and as with any time you come up upon an alien story, you are going to get two points of view, unless you're listening to this podcast, in which case I will give you the whole thing without any sort of slant. But if you read a book, you watch a special, you're going to get one of two things. You're either going to get unequivocally, there is irrefutable proof that aliens and alien spacecraft technology are located at Area 51. Or you're going to get someone aggressively laughing in your face telling you that there's nothing like that there. I will do neither. Now, going back to my Roswell podcast one more time, if you haven't heard it, I would recommend checking it out before you listen to this, because it leads very nicely up into the topic of Area 51. But if you don't, that's fine. I will still touch on everything, so no worries. Now, as for Area 51 and its mythological place in American culture, I think the whole myth can be summed up in the movie Independence Day. If you remember, and I hope you do because it's a classic, Will Smith finds an alien and he brings it to a military base, which turns out to be Area 51. And the president is informed by a CIA guy that there is, in fact, an Area 51, and it has alien bodies and ships there, which the president had no idea of. Then they go there, and they find out that Area 51 is, in fact, lousy with spaceships and aliens. That's pretty much it, in a nutshell. It promotes the idea that Area 51 is there, and even the president has no knowledge of it. It's so top secret, the president got eyes on it. And it dovetails nicely with something that just happened, because recently, very recently, Hillary Clinton, in a campaign speech, said that if she was elected president, she would investigate Area 51 to find out what was there. And it's very interesting that she would say that, because, first of all, it suggests that maybe presidents really don't know what goes on there. Or, you know, it's just Hillary being Hillary and making a lot of noise, which is not unusual either. But it's interesting for a third reason, and that's because Bill Clinton actually said in an interview years ago that he had already checked out Area 51, and there were no aliens there. But what does that mean, he checked it out? Did he go on a grand tour, like in a golf cart, and get taken into every hangar and look into the mountain range carved out mountain area where the ships are supposedly located? I doubt it. And honestly, I don't care. The government has lied about this place for 60 years, so Slick Willie coming out and saying nothing to see here, that doesn't exactly mean case closed as far as I'm concerned. Which brings me to something I want to make very clear. Most UFO fanatics will not let any form of reason convince them that there are no ships at Area 51, or that no UFO crashed at Roswell, or any other sighting or crash or whatever. They will never let anything go. Me, however, I think a lot of it is total shit. But Area 51, my mind is still open, simply because if the government was willing to lie about this thing that long, isn't it possible to think that there are still maybe a few things we haven't been told? I mean, it comes down to this all the time. The government finally acknowledges it, and then we're supposed to simply say, all right, well, there you have it. They said no aliens, so no aliens. Look, they said there was no fucking base. And just because now they say there's no aliens, I still have questions. And so should you. Look at it this way. Say you have a teenage kid, and he's been stashing milk duds in a locked drawer. But his brother swears that he's got some nudie magazines in there too with the milk duds. Now you know about the milk duds because you've seen him carry them in and stash a few in there every once in a while. But you're not sure about the magazines. But you keep hounding him about it for a couple weeks. Finally, he comes clean with the milk duds. He says, yes, sorry. Goddamn milk duds been here the whole time, as you knew. But that's it, no nudie magazines, just the milk duds, okay? So I've admitted it, it's done, you cannot ask me anymore, case closed, milk duds, nothing more, period. Are you gonna believe that shit? Or are you going to look for the nudie magazines? That's a shitty analogy, and I apologize, but that's my logic. Just because you admit one thing doesn't mean that everything else is cleared and no longer questionable. So, what is Area 51 officially? And what do we actually know? We know that in the 50s, they started testing and creating stealth technology. Area 51 is 150 miles south of Las Vegas on a dry lake bed called Groom Lake. So it was a perfect place to create long-ass runways and test this stealth technology without anybody seeing it, because it's out in the middle of fucking nowhere, I promise you. I've been there, and I'll tell you more about that later. Now, the name Area 51 is not actually an official name. It just comes from when they were looking where to put the base. They were looking at this military map that designated this certain Area 51. So it's had many code names over the years. One of them is Skunk Works, and more prominently used, the most popular nickname is Dreamland. So anyway, it's surrounded by mountains, tucked in deep out of sight, and visible only from high mountaintops that are well over 20 miles away. So during the 80s, when it became like a household name, there was actually a lot of mountain ranges that you could see it from. There were a ton of vantage points. And UFO people would hike up there at night and watch weird lights and weird craft dart around the sky above the base, doing seemingly impossible movements and turns, flying faster than a fucking bullet. So, as you can imagine, the Air Force wasn't really interested in putting on a show for these people. So, over the years, they expanded Area 51, and they did land grabs until virtually every point of view of Area 51 was gone. So right now, there is one place left. It's called Teekaboo Peak. It's a mountain that's far from Area 51. It's about 26 miles from the base, and it is a rough-ass climb from what I've been told. But you can also now check it out from Google Maps. Now, if you do look at it on Google, you'll see all the runways, you'll see all the hangars, you'll see that it is gigantic, but you know what else you'll see there? There's a baseball field. It's a little baseball field for the workers at Area 51. So, you know, if they play the aliens in a softball game, they've got home field advantage. Thank you. All right, seriously, here's the thing. As the legend goes, there are aliens at Area 51, or at least ships that are being reverse engineered. Now, that's not exactly true. This does not actually happen at Area 51, according to legend. The people who claim that there is otherworldly stuff there, all of them, claim that those things are housed in an area called S4, which is somewhat adjacent to Area 51, but it's not actually part of the base. It's several miles from the base and actually tucked away into a mountain, James Bond villain style. Now, this is the place that the government did not acknowledge when they spilled the beans about Area 51 in 2013. They categorically deny its existence. Just like they categorically denied Area 51 for 60 fucking years. So putting aside S4 for just a moment, what has been proven about Area 51? What is fact? According to the CIA and Air Force releases, along with many other unofficial studies and leaks, testimonies, Area 51, like I said, started in the 50s, just as the Cold War was ramping up to full throttle. So they started to create and test stealth technology and built these ridiculous long runways to test this stuff, the first one being the U-2 spy plane. Now, reportedly, that plane was being designed at Lockheed, but they needed to keep that shit under deeper wraps and fly that thing, you know, away from the public. So they built these big-ass runways, and they got to work. The U-2 took years to build, but it was a huge success. It could travel tens of thousands of miles in the air, it could avoid radar, and while doing so, take clear pictures of Soviet bases and installations. Now, eventually, of course, Russians figured it out, and they shot one of those goddamn things down. Now, the pilot lived, and he was eventually exchanged for some Russian prisoner we were holding, and got back to the United States safe and sound. But the game was up on the old U-2. The Russians knew about it, so on to bigger and better things. Those things, or should I say that thing, the SR-71 Blackbird. Now, this goddamn thing was badass, and I must tip my cap. It could go from California to New York in like 10 minutes. This thing tore through the sound barrier like Kleenex. And while doing that, it's flying at like 70,000 feet. It's going Mach 4. It was the fastest man-breathing aircraft ever from 1976 on. And the thing is weird looking. It's cool looking too. The CIA actually, in their recent quote-unquote disclosure about Area 51, they say that the Blackbird was responsible for damn near every UFO sighting during its run that was from the 60s to the late 90s. But it doesn't look that weird. It's hard for me to imagine a Mach 4 stealth plane, like, hovering over a forest in Virginia, creating a crowd that's oohing and aahing that it's a UFO. But that's what the government says. You saw a UFO, you saw the Blackbird. Case closed. Anyway, the U-2, the Blackbird, the A-12, those are some of the biggies that Area 51 is to be thanked for, if you're into that kind of thing. But much more stealth and God knows what other kinds of technology have come out of there. And I'll tell you this, that place, to this day, much like the second Death Star, is fully operational. They are still working on a ton of shit over at Area 51. It actually has more hangars and bigger runways being built all the time. So they are still doing a lot of whatever over there. I'd speculate super drones, invisible airplanes. I don't know. But there's a shitload of people being flown into that place every day, and they're working on some serious stuff. And they are flown in every day. There's a thing called the Janet Terminal at Las Vegas Airport. And every day, several white planes marked with just a red stripe and nothing else, pick up workers and fly them into Area 51. And there's a few buses that do the same, but nobody drives a car through the front gate to start their day at work at Area 51. They keep an eye on everybody, everyone's accounted for, and there's a tight lid on that place. Seriously, the security is mind-boggling. There's a highway that goes past Area 51 in Nevada called Highway 375. And it's actually been officially named the Extraterrestrial Highway. Now, when you start on that highway, there is a sign that says, no food or gas for 110 miles. And while you're driving along this stretch of 110 miles, at one point you come to a single lonely mailbox about halfway to the base. This thing is supposedly owned by a rancher, but by all accounts, nobody has ever visited that box in many, many years. Outside of UFO freaks who stop and take pictures of it and look at it. And honestly, if mail was somehow being delivered to that thing, I can't imagine that the UFO freaks wouldn't have stolen it to look for clues. Anyway, you drive a little further past that lonely mailbox and you get to the gate, which is, it's not really a gate. It's like a dirt road turnoff, which once you get a few feet in, you're greeted with very intimidating signs that indicate that it is an Air Force base, trespassers can be arrested, and deadly force is authorized. So if you got a death wish, haul your ass into the entranceway at Area 51 and see what happens. Also, when you get to those signs, there's like a mountain ridge nearby where you will always see at least one white SUV with two dudes in it watching your every move. And the UFO enthusiasts have nicknamed these guys Camo Dudes. Also, when you're at that sign and you got the Camo Dudes looking at you, if you were to drive past the sign, you are still miles and miles from the base. So there's no chance that you're going to get anywhere close to it. Even if you want to sneak around and walk around nearby the base on public land, you're not getting anywhere that way either, because there's motion sensors in the ground on the public land near Area 51. They are found all the time by UFO explorers, so if you're going to go there, stay on the fucking road. Don't pull over to look at this. Well, you can pull over to look at the sign, but just, you know, do it quickly and don't pass the sign. And don't go walking around the public land, because you're just going to trip off one of these fucking sensors. Also, there's no fence. There's no fence around Area 51. It's just orange markers placed by the side of the road. If you step past that, you stepped into Area 51, and you might get shot. Let me tell you a personal story about all of this. About 13 years ago, my friend Bobby Chastain and I, who was on this podcast before, we were in Las Vegas and we decided to spice up our lives and drive past Area 51. What we expected to see? Nothing, really, but it's just like kind of a bucket list thing where we thought, let's go by and maybe we'll get lucky and see some fucking weird flying saucer flying around. And it's nighttime, it's late, and it's dark, and it's stormy. It was a dark and stormy night. So we see the extraterrestrial highway sign. We see the no gas for 110 miles, so we made sure we were all filled up. And we start driving down the road. Now, about to the point where we got to the mailbox, which we didn't pull over, we just, you know, we took a look at it. It's just a fucking mailbox. At that point, it started to rain pretty heavily, and the desert winds actually created this sort of wind effect where the rain was actually coming at the car horizontally, like completely horizontally, like it looked like we were in the Millennium Falcon at hyperspace. And just as that starts to happen, we can't see. Bobby's driving, his fingers, hands are clutched on the steering wheel in fear. I am biting my nails, as if it weren't scary enough. Out of nowhere, and I mean literally out of nowhere, two gigantically bright headlights pop up behind us. and are tailgating us like feet away. Gigantic bright headlights. We are terrified. You know, I would like to believe that it was like an alien saucer following us, but it was clearly headlights. Okay, so it was clearly headlights. But the thing was, where did they come from? There was no car that turned off a road and started following us. There was nobody behind us for 50 miles. All of a sudden, there's these headlights. We got the Millennium Falcon rain coming at us. It was fucking terrifying. So for about 4 or 5 miles, these headlights are behind us. We're about to piss our pants. And then, all of a sudden, they're gone. Gone. The car doesn't turn away. It doesn't slow down so that it's further behind us. Gone. No parking lights, no brake lights, nothing. So I can only assume, reasonably I think, that these were camo dudes or some security that was hanging out somewhere on the side of the road, pulled up behind us without any lights. He had some night vision goggles or something, intending to scare the fuck out of us. And guess what? Mission accomplished. So finally, the rain starts to die down and we get to the little off-road where the intimidating signs are. We pull in, we get just to the point where the signs are. We take a quick look, no pictures, too afraid, get back in the car and keep heading to the end of the 375 highway and Area 51 experience to a little town called Rachel, Nevada. Rachel, Nevada's got about 3,000 to 4,000 people in its population. And its main attraction is a little restaurant inn called the Little Alien. So we go into the Little Alien, we get a couple of cups of shitty coffee, and we talk to the owner who's been there since the 70s, and she has got every crazy wild story about aliens that you could ever hope to imagine. She told us that there's like 7 types of aliens they keep over there. She's seen flying saucers from Area 51 to Timbuktu. She's got a logbook of all the different aliens she's seen, and then anyone who comes there who's seen a ship or an alien puts a little description in her little logbook, and not to mention she's got alien t-shirts and dolls, and you know, she's selling all the swag on top of everything else. Kind of a nutcase, but very sweet, and we enjoyed our time at the Alien. And then we headed off to Phoenix to watch spring training baseball. But I will tell you that it was one of the most terrifying and exhilarating experiences of my life. So if you're in for a little fun, you know, go to Area 51, but make sure you fill up on gas, because if you get stranded out there, man, it's over. It is over. So that takes care of what we know so far officially. Ridiculously tight, intimidating security, stealth airplanes, SR-71, private planes taking employees back and forth to work, the freakish security, and now it's time for what we don't know. Officially, anyway. And that is called S4, where supposedly the goddamn aliens are housed. S4, once again, not acknowledged by the government in any of their releases about Area 51. Supposedly built into a mountain, like I said, James Bond villain style, with 9 hangars that are supposedly covered with a mountain-like texture, colored camouflage, so that you can't really tell if you go by it that you can actually get into it. And where did this come from? Who brought this up? Who made this part of public lore? Well, it started, at least in the eyes of the general public, in 1989 with a guy named Bob Lazar. He's an amazing character, and if it's not for Bob fucking Lazar, it's very unlikely that any of this alien stuff is coming out, and we're probably not talking about it right now. So thank God, true or false, for Bob Lazar. Now, he came about because a guy named George Knapp, who was a very credible journalist for Las Vegas TV, was approached by Bob Lazar to do an interview. And Bob Lazar claimed that he had worked at Area 51 on reverse engineering alien spaceships. So George Knapp put him on TV, and his first interview was done with, you know, those that shadow stuff where you can't see him, and then that classic 80s voice alternator to make his voice sound all low and weird. And nobody really bought it. Everybody thought it was sensational bullshit. So Knapp had him come back and do a second interview, convinced him to do it in person. Now, after the interview happened, George Knapp claims that Lazar was like freaking out, and he was asking him to destroy the tape or give the tape back to him, because he said the reasoning for doing his interview was that he was vaguely threatened all the time when he worked at Area 51, never to talk about it. So he was afraid by doing this interview that he might get killed. But then he came to the conclusion that if he did get killed after doing this interview, it would only prove his point. So he thought it best to do it. And, you know, I guess he figured the public had a right to know all this alien stuff that went around at Area 51. Now, George Knapp, he's a good reporter, and he put his ass on the line for this thing. And ever since he did it, he's been known as the UFO guy. And he claims that he still gets calls and letters from UFO weirdos all the time. And, you know, amongst his journalist peers, he's not really thought of as someone who has any credibility. And, well, he does actually occasionally host the radio show Coast to Coast AM. So that way he can be the so-called UFO guy in peace, be accepted for it and liked for it for a few hours a month. But George Knapp believes the Bob Lazar story, and he went to great pains to bring some credibility to that story. Now, Bob Lazar claimed that he worked at Los Alamos Lab in New Mexico, which works on all kinds of top secret stuff, and he claimed he had high clearance. Now, George Knapp went to verify this, and according to him, he was denied that Bob Lazar worked there at every turn. They told him, no, we have no record of him, he never worked here, shut the fuck up, get out of here, over and over and over again, until he finally found a phone directory for Los Alamos National Laboratory from a couple years back with Bob Lazar's name on it. And then he was able to find a newspaper article from the lab that featured Bob Lazar, because what Bob Lazar did before he supposedly worked at Area 51 was to convert cars into jet-powered cars. And so he was, you know, he was lauded for this, as it was pretty radical for its time, and even now for its time. But the problem with Lazar was he claimed that he had a pretty high education. I think it was MIT that he claimed he went to. And Stanton Friedman, who I talked about in the Roswell podcast, who's a very avid UFO researcher, he went to verify that Bob Lazar went to that school, and he was door slammed in his face every time, much like the Los Alamos experience, but he never got to find a phone book or a newspaper article. He got nothing. So Stanton Friedman declared Bob Lazar a fraud. Now, Bob Lazar claims that the situation with MIT is similar to what happened at Los Alamos, and they simply will not release his records. I don't know. Hard to decide on that one, but most people use that as the sole reason to discredit Bob Lazar and discredit everything else he says. But there's a couple other things. First is, he passed a bunch of lie detector tests. Well, I don't know if a bunch, but he passed some. He passed lie detector tests. Never failed one. And finally, he was able to produce a W-2 form that was verified, where he was paid by the Department of Naval Intelligence, which would not have been Los Alamos, and most likely would have been Area 51, or S-4. Now, let's get into the details of Bob fucking Lazar's story. What he says is that when he was initially brought to Area 51, he did all of his paperwork and initiation and everything at the actual base. Then he was put on a bus with blinded windows and driven to the S4 location, where he, when he was let out of the bus, he saw the camouflage mountains. And he went into an office where there was a big sign with a picture of a gray alien that said, "They're here." And he was basically briefed as to what he was going to be doing, which was to reverse engineer some alien technology that the government got its hands on. He was assigned one UFO. He called it the Sport Model. It was a very slick, very sleek, very aerodynamic. And he says that when he started to take a look at it, there was a sticker, like a bumper sticker type thing on it that had the American flag. And he says that when he saw that, he assumed they had been joking about it being a UFO, and the American flag signified that it was in fact just some government-created vehicle. But as he got into it, he realized, in his words, that it was nothing that a human being could have created. It was powered by this thing, this... I'm no scientist, so I'm just going to try and explain what he said. That there was this power emitter that was like the size of half of a basketball. And that it was so powerful and generated so much energy that they actually put a candle next to it and it froze the candle. But not just that it froze the candle, it actually froze the flame. So that the flame was still emitting light, but it wasn't flickering like a candle does. And he was very amazed by that. And he said that the ship used some sort of anti-gravity propulsion system so that it didn't actually fly through space. It pulled space towards it and therefore could traverse millions or hundreds of thousands of light years within a very short matter of time. Now, the main element that he says powered this Sport Model spacecraft was called Element 115, which at the time was not a part of the periodic table. It was not an official element recognized by the science of the time. And he said that it was a very stable element. It was able to power this whole craft and create this whole anti-gravity propulsion system, but that was the only place it existed, was in that lab, in that ship. Now, interestingly, just recently, many, many years after Bob Lazar made this claim, Element 115, or something called Element 115, was synthesized by some scientists, but it was only able to stay stable for like less than a second, milliseconds. So if the alien stories are true, they had mastered something that we have just barely begun to discover. But it's interesting that Bob Lazar talked about this element, and later the element was found. Now, some scientists say that they already knew about that element before Bob Lazar claimed it, but a lot of scientists say, no, it just came up now. And then there's other scientists that say, well, the Element 115 that we're working on doesn't really adhere to the specs of the Element 115 that Bob Lazar talked about. So maybe he made the whole goddamn thing up. I don't know. What I do know is that he says he would be taken out of the base to watch tests of the craft as they would lift it up off the ground and fly it around a little bit. And he says at one time when he went out there to watch tests, there were 9 hangars open in the mountain. Those little mountain doors that I was telling you about, they were all open, and each one of them had its own individual spacecraft. He said that some of them were damaged, some of them looked good, but none of them were as hot shit as the Sport Model that he was working on. And not only that, he also says that while he was working at Area 51, S4, not Area 51, he had chance to peruse this little booklet about projects that were going on at S4, and that most of them were about trying to mimic the anti-gravity propulsion of the ships, but one of them was called Project Looking Glass, which was being designed with the hopes of being able to look back in time. Unfortunately, he didn't see anything other than paragraph about it, so he couldn't go into more detail about it, and that's always a shame to me, because Project Looking Glass sounds fucking awesome. Anyway, he was able to get into the Sport Model alien ship, and he described it as having these tiny little seats resembling the configuration of like a kid's tea party, seats that wouldn't fit anyone taller than like 3.5 feet. Very few controls. And so he, of course, described this as completely otherworldly and based on the propulsion, the Element 115, the basketball, and the T-set setup for little tiny aliens. This was not something of this Earth. Now, the way that he started to bring this into the public eye was, the first thing he did was he took a friend to see the tests of the craft that went on at night. And according to this friend, whose name is John Lear, and he's kind of a wackaloon, so I'm not even going to get into him. But according to John Lear, Bob Lazar always knew exactly when the tests were going to happen. And they actually did videotape themselves going out to see a couple of these tests. And, you know, you can see some very blurry, you know, 80s VHS style things floating around in the sky. One other thing he said was, while in Area 51, he glanced over some documents that did actually show photos of gray aliens and indicated that they were from the Zeta Reticuli star system, which is about 40 light years away from Earth. That's interesting because many UFO abductees, and even Stanton Friedman in his research, all speculate that this is where gray aliens come from. Skeptics will tell you that the star system has been examined a million times by high-powered telescopes and reveal no planets. And incidentally, Lazar said that he never saw an actual alien walking around, but he did see these pictures. Now, coming back to the credibility of Bob Lazar, why would he be allowed to work at Area 51? A guy like that. And George Knapp actually made an interesting point about that. What he said is, again, why would the government hire and give top secret clearance to some glasses-wearing nerd with a weird personal history, underwhelming education that was less than what would normally be qualified for such a position? Would they ever hire someone like that? Yes. Edward Snowden. Famous whistleblower who just a couple of years ago blew the whistle on the NSA wiretapping the fuck out of everybody's phone, among other things. So the point was that Lazar's qualifications, his past, not necessarily an automatic disqualification. It's not preposterous to believe that he could work for the government, especially if, as Lazar claims, they were looking for people that thought outside of the box. Apparently, you know, they brought scientist after scientist in and they always got the same answers. So they wanted to get some weirdo who could jet power convert his car. Give him a run at it. But luckily for Bob Lazar, not enough people believe him to make him any sort of threat. So what he does these days is he has a website where he sells weird nuclear supplies and lives in a nice house in America with a skull and crossbones flag above it. Whereas Edward Snowden is living in goddamn Siberia under Russian asylum while the USA continues to try to get him here on charges of espionage, among another variety of charges. So, Bob Lazar, why not hire him? He did work at Los Alamos. That was finally verified, so he did have experience. Co-workers verified his employment there. He was listed in the directory. Maybe he's just the kind of guy. Another thing about Bob Lazar that's important to understand is that he's never really financially benefited from these revelations. He's never written a book, there's no movie, and he very rarely gives interviews. In 2014, George Knapp actually twisted his arm to do a radio interview because it was the 25th anniversary of the TV special he did in 89. And Lazar's story was basically the same. But at this point now, 25 years later, he actually said that he'd rather people not believe the story. He just wants peace and quiet, and he said he's tired of being inundated with interview requests and emails from UFO crazies. So he emphasized that continually. He's happy that people just not believe it at this point. So what the fuck is this about? Did he literally make this all up? There's no reason to believe that he worked there, but there's actually no reason to believe he didn't. But again, I cannot see, and this always boggles my mind about UFO stuff, why someone would make all of this up and then not really gain anything out of it other than being a fucking laughingstock, which is generally what he is to most people. There have been countless people over the years who have lied about UFO encounters, and most of them are easily discredited for various reasons, and usually their tales are so out of this world, pun intended. They talk about communicating with aliens aboard spaceships, being whisked around the galaxy as a special guest, shit like that. There's tons of that stuff, and it's so easily swept to the side. But Lazar's claims, much more, pun intended again, earthly. There's also another theory about Bob Lazar that he was just like a patsy, a ploy by the CIA to throw out disinformation, deliberately concoct a bunch of shit so that the government could keep working on their stealth stuff while he was out there spinning yarns about aliens. Of course, he categorically and emphatically denies that. Lastly, on the Lazar part, the CIA, when they did their recent disclosure about Area 51, they basically said that all UFO sightings were nothing but sightings of their strange experiments. I don't buy that or even understand why they would say that. It seems to me like the more attention they draw to Area 51, the bigger it becomes in popular legend. So why keep talking about it? Why keep explaining it, saying, this is this, the UFOs are us, the stealth bombers were created here. Why the fuck? Just say it's a fucking secret military base. It's top secret weaponry. We can't talk about it. But it's there. Yes, sorry. You know, we got to do our thing there, so please stop asking. Yes, it's there. It's like the kid with the nudie magazines. The more you say about it, the more suspicious it becomes. But I don't know. I mean, they have produced some weird looking things there, so maybe it is true. But there's more stories on the other side of that coin, so I am not going to buy their blanket explanation just yet. Because there's a few more guys who talk about working at S4. And so it's not just Bob Lazar. I want to talk about these other dudes. A couple years ago, this adorable old man named Boyd Bushman came out and videotaped his deathbed revelation about Area 51. Now, deathbed revelation, deathbed confessions, those terms, you know, I use them lightly. Those are usually reserved for like a murderer, you know, admitting guilt right before he croaks. The point being, Boyd Bushman was in really, really ill health, and he had something to say before he shuffled off. Now, the thing about Boyd Bushman was he was no joke. He had 28 patents on file with the USPTO. Verifiably, a high-ranking, respected research scientist with Lockheed. He knew his shit. If he had died without telling fantastical tales of aliens, he would have had plenty of honor and plenty of respect to leave behind. But nevertheless, in his final months, he gave us this. He claimed that he had worked at Area 51, and years ago, he gave a friend there an Instamatic camera to take pictures of aliens and UFOs. So his friend was apparently someone who had access to the base, could sneak this in. And so during Bushman's deathbed interview, he showed the pictures. Old, faded, blurry pictures of a UFO that was all powered up and spinning, and it just looks like a bunch of lights. But he had several pictures, very clear, of the classic gray alien. And he said that these grays communicated by telepathy. If you asked a question in your head, the answer would come back to you in your own voice. And he explained, much like Lazar, that they use some sort of anti-gravity propulsion. And again, this guy was a very accomplished scientist, but he had no explanation of how they used it. Whether that's because it's so beyond our comprehension, or he's just making this stuff up, or he's just repeating secondhand knowledge. Now, the thing about his picture of the classic gray, it was found out very quickly to be a doll that was sold at Walmart years before called Scary Alien. So the pictures, when you line them up side by side, it's fucking clearly the doll. It's not an alien. And what makes me sad about this is that I don't know if Boyd Bushman just took a picture of a doll and tried to convince us that it was an alien, or if he was somehow like duped into, you know, making a fucking jackass out of himself right before he died. So frankly, it's a sad tale, but you know, his credibility dangles by a string when he holds up these pictures of the Walmart scary alien toy, simply taken out of its box and shot with an Instamatic camera. And here's my thing. I never understand the logic of these deathbed things. Why lie? I know people do it, but to me, the last thing I want to do before I begin my journey to becoming nothing but a skeleton is to make up a bunch of shit. I don't get it. I can't imagine, like, being on my deathbed and all of a sudden, you know, grabbing my son and saying, "Son, I want you to know that I secretly played piano on 10 U2 albums, uncredited, but I saw it all. Let me tell you some stories about the Edge." And then continue to spout off a bunch of made-up stories. Why would you do that to people? I can see the opposite. I can understand thinking, I can't walk out of the door of life without getting some things off my chest. But I just can't understand lying. But it happens all the time. I mean, even though you're lying, and in most cases knowing that you're going to be found out as soon as you die. You know, my son is going to look into the U2 thing and find out that I was bullshitting him in the last moments of my life. Why would I do that? Anyway, once these pictures came out from Boyd Bushman, the internet blew up. Hallelujah. Here we go. Proof of aliens. And then, as I said, that Walmart doll thing became exposed. And even with that, with this irrefutable comparison that these pictures were just the pictures of a doll, the UFO people, in order to discredit themselves, had to hold on to the shit, and they found any reason to keep denying that this obvious toy doll was, in fact, not an obvious toy doll. And they rolled out a classic conspiracy theory. This one was that the government, knowing that these pictures of aliens would someday get out, actually commissioned this toy to be built by Walmart so that they could get it out onto the market first and get out in front of the issue before the actual alien pictures came out. This is the kind of thing that makes alien stories such a joke to people, because when a fake one comes up and the UFO buffs won't let go of it, it makes the next one that might be credible seem like the same bullshit, and so it's passed on. But Bushman had more than just the picture of the doll, my friends. He also had the name of the planet. Let me look at this name, this fucking name. Quintumnia. Yeah, Quintumnia, a toy alien from the planet Quintumnia. This story makes me sad because if you see the videos of Boyd Bushman, he's like, he's so likable and he's sweet. You know, Bob Lazar, he can handle himself. One way or the other, that dude knows what he's doing. But this Bushman guy, I don't know. I can, you know, again, I just can only surmise that he got bamboozled by someone into believing this or just wanted to go out with a bang. So rest in peace, Boyd Bushman. I don't know what the fuck you were doing. But we have more. We have another deathbed story. This one quite good. And this one coming in exclusive video form from an unnamed anonymous man in his 70s, at least, interviewed by a man named Richard Dolenz. Now, Richard Dolenz is an established UFO researcher. He's not just some lunatic. So whoever this guy that he was interviewing was, wasn't just some dude off the street. He had to have been something for Dolenz to give him any credence to interview him. He claimed that he was ex-CIA. Told a very similar story of working at Area 51 and specifically S4. Now this guy, he was closer to the end than Boyd Bushman. Way closer. He talks in a wheezing, soft, raspy voice, and frankly, it's hard to watch this video because it looks like this guy is going to die any minute. And this was done in 2013, so I am confident in saying he passed away in 2013, so God rest your soul. But while he was wheezing out his last few breaths, he claims he was sent to Area 51 by President Eisenhower for intelligence. There he saw the U2, he saw the Blackbird, and S4 as the specific location of the alien ships. Also says that the Roswell UFO was there, along with its dead aliens, and was made of a light, unbreakable, foil-like material that many people who were involved with Roswell also claim to have seen. But the other thing he says is that President Eisenhower was going to invade S4 in order to get information about the aliens if he was not told specifically what was there. Because, much like the Independence Day president, he couldn't get access. Which brings us back to the Hillary Clinton joke. Well, I mean, I think she was making a joke. Maybe she was serious. But one thing I know is that Bill Clinton did really actually try to find out about aliens. And he says that he found out and there was nothing there. But one of his aides, John Podesta, lamented after he left office that he didn't find anything about UFOs, that he should have done more to find out about UFOs. Take what you like from those comments, but, you know, if you look at this Eisenhower thing, if that's true, well, it looks like presidents want to know what the fuck is going on at Area 51 and S4, and they're not being allowed to. Anyway, back to the wheezing agent, this anonymous guy. He claims that he saw an alien interview. He says he saw several ships and that there are several types of gray aliens. The format of this podcast is not about playing clips or playing music or anything. It's about talk. Hard talk about stories, opinions, and shooting the shit about Star Wars and whatever. But in this guy's case, I'm going to break the format this once because you have to hear a clip of this guy talking to hear what he sounds like and specifically in this clip, what he has to say. So here he is. Once again, an anonymous so-called CIA agent, ex-CIA agent, in an undisclosed hotel room, speaking to UFO researcher Richard Dolenz. Let's hear a couple minutes here.
Land, what happens? Can you describe this whole process, what you saw?
He took us the 13 or 15 miles south to S4. And like different garage door openings. Okay. And in these garage door openings, they had like different saucer crafts. The very first one had the Roswell craft in. It was kind of crashed up, but apparently every alien that was in it died except for a couple.
So you see the Roswell craft, and what are some of the others that you see?
Well, the Roswell craft was really strange because it looked like real heavy aluminum foil. We could rock next to it, and you could rock it. The whole thing probably weighed 150, 300 pounds.
Could they tell what the source of power was of this craft?
Yeah, it was a reverse gravitational thing of some kind. In fact, one later on, I got the mathematical code for reversing gravity in a 3x5 card. I guess there are different types of grays and so on.
How did you see that evidence?
Well, at the later on at S4, we viewed the autopsy film. And then the colonel said, what we've got in here is we're interviewing a gray alien.
Now, if this story is made up, it's incredibly depressing that this dude is telling a mouthful of lies as his last thing on Earth. But if it's true, wow. And thank you, man. Thank you, anonymous old man. I am very glad that you were able to catch your breath long enough to do that interview. God rest your soul, my friend. And there's a lot more witness testimony where this comes from. I could give these stories to you all day. But it's important to know that it's not only these guys. There are other high-ranking people that have thrown their hat into this ring. I'll give you a couple names, just so you know that I'm not giving you a bunch of bullshit. Wendell Stevens, retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel. Colonel Steve Wilson, retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, and Captain Bill Uhouse of the United States Marines, who has been interviewed many times and also spins the same types of tales about S4, but they always vary. All these stories that these guys tell always vary. There's like, there's one gray alien, there's several, there's one ship, there's nine ships, there's this, there's that. Jesus. How do you make heads or tails of this? I mean, is it just easier to say CIA, fine, I believe you. U2, SR-71, nothing else. Maybe. But I don't understand the personal motivations to lie. When you put all these people together, these three guys that I just mentioned, Boyd Bushman, Bob Lazar, throw that wheezing guy into all this, what the fuck? Why would they all lie? So what I have to say to that is, even if you're a skeptic, when you pile these guys all up together, at some point you have to start looking for common threads just for the sake of being thorough. You know, take all of what these guys say, throw it against the wall, and see what sticks. Instead, every time some guy comes out and mentions S4, reverse engineering a ship, anti-gravity propulsion, it's shut the fuck up, you're a lunatic, back to the CIA explanation, case closed, we're all done. And so it goes, every time. And like I have said in these podcasts, I don't want to give you my opinion about these things, and a lot of times I don't have an opinion, I'm still looking. But I'm going to give you this one thing that I believe. I think that there is indeed some sort of S4 facility near Area 51. Whether it houses spaceships or aliens or fucking half basketballs that can burn candles and freeze candles, I don't know. But I definitely believe that everything we've been told about Area 51 from the CIA is not everything that goes on at Area 51. I believe there's something else there, and they're never going to mention it. And unless they finally do someday, no one's ever going to believe it, except for a bunch of freakish UFO people and people like me who try to ride the balance of these stories just to find out what's real. So I don't know, and neither do you. But it's time to move on to those debunkers who claim that no such thing exists. And at the head of that pack, let's talk about Annie Jacobson. I don't want to talk about Annie Jacobson, but I have to talk about Annie Jacobson because her book, Area 51, let's see here, An Uncensored History of America's Top Secret Military Base, that book has to be dealt with, all 523 fucking pages of it. Annie Jacobson, quote-unquote, investigative reporter for the LA Times, or she was when this book came out several years ago. And her book supposedly blows the lid off of Area 51 by telling the tales of several different men that worked there that she interviewed. Radar experts, engineers. And from all these interviews, she puts together a mosaic that reveals what we already know. That the base is top secret, that it wasn't acknowledged by the government for 60 years, and that it made a bunch of stealth aircraft. Now, unfortunately for Annie, after she released this book, most of the people she sourced fucking hated it and called her out on it being bullshit. One of the guys actually called her, quote, an author who refuses to repent her literary crimes and errors. Crimes and errors. But it wasn't because she was trying to debunk the aliens at the base. It was because she spun a tale far, far crazier than UFOs. She claims, I swear to God, and she's written about this in other books, she says that the craft that crashed at Roswell was not of alien origin and was not of American military origin. But instead, it was a saucer built by the Soviets using technology they'd had obtained from German engineers at the end of World War II, and there's more. According to an unnamed source, unnamed, he said that the craft was manned by human teenagers who had been medically altered to look like aliens with giant heads and huge black eyes. Now, who fucking did this to children? Well, of course. Notorious Nazi death camp Dr. Josef Mengele, Jacobson writes, again quoting her anonymous source, who was quoting a source of another source, also unnamed. It seems that Mengele was working for the Soviet boss Joseph Stalin, who needed these mutants for a special project, scaring the shit out of Americans with a fake alien visitation. Jesus fucking... Oh, God. Annie Jacobson is a hack. She names 73 of 74 sources in the book, and the one she doesn't mention is the guy that professed to know people who knew about this German-Soviet prank. But the media was cool with her. Why? Because she's Annie Jacobson. She's the Los Angeles Times. And she interviewed an anonymous guy. So what? That's journalism, right? Anonymous guy. What's the difference between her anonymous source and the wheezing guy? She works for the LA Times. That's the difference. And she was on everything. She was on CNN. She was on the goddamn Daily Show. And reviews of this book came out that somewhat praised it, but mainly people focused on the fact that there were over 40 errors in the book without even getting into that shit about the Nazi experiment on kids and throwing them into the New Mexico desert. So, like I said, she's a hack. Her book is total shit. Leave it alone, Annie Jacobson. So what is there? What is it, Area 51? And more specifically, S4. Is it there? Are there extraterrestrial relics? Is there technology being scrutinized? Reverse engineered? Well, like Roswell and like every other goddamn UFO case, no physical evidence for us. We have witness testimony from several people, a few of whom have now escaped the Earth via death. But we have some people telling a somewhat consistent story about some weird-ass shit going on a weird-ass mountain near Area 51. Oh, and by the way, if you think that the idea of carving into a mountain is preposterous, please remember that NORAD is carved into a mountain, and there's more where that came from. Bases carved into mountains are not reserved for fiction. They exist. So keep your mind open, or close it if you want, but ask yourself if you really think the government came clean when they finally gave up on a 60-year lie. Was that it? Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. Maybe they've told us it all. They just got sick of lying. And I should mention, there's one other important thing that I have to get out before I wrap this thing up. One of the reasons that the CIA finally disclosed Area 51 in 2013 is because several years before that, there was a class action lawsuit filed against the U.S. government by a number of people that had worked at Area 51. What had happened to these poor people was that at Area 51, they were taking their massive amounts of nuclear waste, putting it in holes in the ground, and then fucking burning it. Burning it. So the fumes went into the air, the waste sunk into the ground, and guess what happened? Tons of these workers got cancer, at best. At worst, they got skin diseases where they had huge open sores on their skin. Some of them had skin that basically turned into scales. These poor fucking people suffered. And finally, they got legal representation to take their case to the government, and in doing so, the Area 51 thing was unavoidable. So, had it not been for that, I'm going to bet you that the CIA still wouldn't be acknowledging that place. They would have hidden these poor people's fates just like they hid the base and just like they hide anything else that's going on there. When they get caught with their pants down, they come out and say, oh, here's the truth. Meanwhile, whatever the fuck else is going on there, whether it's people getting annihilated from burning nuclear waste or an S4 or an alien ship, God knows. God knows. It really frustrates me, this story, but I also fucking love it. So, That's what I can tell you. What do you think? I don't know. Someday, maybe Hillary Clinton will be able to be given free rein to go all around Area 51, tap on the door of that S4 mountain, see the 9 spaceships, shake hands with the alien, get a nice photo op, and we'll all finally know. Hope you enjoy the story as much as I always enjoy it. Talk to you next time. We are going to be interviewing Greg Hawkins of Bar Rescue on Spike TV. His bar was featured on an episode of that. So we're going to talk about reality TV and how that shit's put together. And Charlie Crabtree will join me to talk about The Grateful Dead shortly. And my next Alien podcast will be about the Phoenix Lights incident of 1997 in Phoenix, Arizona. So, for now, thank you for listening. This is Pop Talkin' Aliens. Drive by Area 51 if you've got some time and you're in Nevada. It's fun. Cue the hot chick.
Pop Talkin' Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.